Does context matter? It's an odd question to ask, especially one of yourself, because after all, isn't your point of view yours and therefore it's correct? So who cares? Well, Vince Taylor cares. He cares so much that he wrote a book about his journey of self-discovery. He called it Beyond the Blindfold. Taylor says, before I really understood context, I understood nothing. And if you sit back for a moment and think about Taylor's assertion, it seems implausible that you could be so far off base because you haven't taken the time to consider the context. Taylor says context is the most powerful, naturally occurring interruption of the conscious mind he has ever experienced. A neural concoction so influential that even the best and brightest suffer from incredible and inexplicable bias. The result is that now to consider his opinions right or wrong, or others wrong versus his being right, became preposterous and, he says, even embarrassing. In fact, he was so moved by what he learned, he spent 10 years writing the book. And should you read it and absorb the messages, you too will challenge yourself and your perspectives and your biases. And if you decide to travel on that journey, one that Dr. Scott Peck calls the road less traveled, well, I suggest you put on your seatbelt and wear a helmet, because the road ahead is bumpy and long. I invited Vince Taylor to join me for a conversation that matters about a path to enlightenment that is humbling and rewarding. Vince, welcome.
Well, I'm so pleased to be here. This is really exciting for me.
You know, in that introduction, you know, I introduced the idea of context. And you think, oh yeah, context. I know what context is, but it's like so many words. Until you sit down and actually think about it, what exactly does that mean? And particularly when you start to examine the value of it in the way that it impacts our lives, how do you describe what context is?
It's a great question, and one I struggled with a little bit when I started. I think the first time I really began to wonder about my opinions and where they were formed was when I traveled a lot as a kid. And I ended up, there's a particular chapter in there called The Morality and the Madness. I ended up in South Africa, and it was during the apartheid days. And all of a sudden, my ideas of right and wrong, left and right, were all upside down. And everything that I'd been taught to believe, from my grandmother, from the guy who helped me fix my bike, to my school teachers, about this is the way it is, the Catholic Church, these people are going here and the other ones are going to a different direction. All of a sudden, I'm standing in a foreign land with wonderfully friendly people who had completely different ideas than I did. And it was terrifying and enlightening, embarrassing, humbling, all of the things that you can imagine, because suddenly I realized that my opinions were formed in the crucible of my experience. But the critical moment was, that doesn't make your experience correct. That doesn't make your experience, pardon me, your opinions correct. They just are what you believe to be true. And once you take the lid off that Pandora's box, you start to think, oh my goodness, everything that leaves my mouth, everything that I write down, is based on my opinion, but is that opinion correct?
Well, I think that you get to the point where you have to ask yourself, well, as you just mentioned, how did I come up or arrive at that opinion? Was it fed to me, or did I actually think my way through it to truly understand this is important to me because, and I can then articulate what that reason is? So often we don't do that.
Well, and I'll tell you just a very brief story. This kind of came about in the age of the internet and email. Now, it's hard to believe all these years later that there was a time there was no internet and email. And we used to talk to each other as people of our vintage. And we needed to drive across town if you wanted to have a conversation or write a letter or have a less than private phone call. Then email came along. All of a sudden, we're all therapists and psychologists. Our friends said, you know, I'm having trouble with my kid at school. My wife's mad at me about something. I need a new job. Suddenly and instantly, we could communicate on very serious issues. So I remember the day as clearly as we're sitting here. I had a question come in from a friend of mine. He wanted to get a new job. And he said, what do you think? And it was a serious question. And I gave him my answer, and I was just about to hit send, and I read my answer, and I thought, that's a really bad answer. It just doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, it was retrospective. Well, where did I get these ideas from? Where did I get any of my ideas from? how come I'm saying these things? And it was literally a lightning bolt. And if this idea is wrong, how many other things in my life have I said and done? And that's where the word embarrassing comes from, where I've shot off my mouth. I hadn't really put any time or effort into the research. And now, to be fair, prior to the internet, it was hard to do research.
I just got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. You know right now that there's somebody who's going to be going, oh, come on, Vince, you want me to do that much work? Why does it matter? Give me, and this sounds like a nice idea in theory, but give me a concrete example about where context comes into play so that I can understand what it is that you're talking
That's
about.
A great, can I give you three?
Sure.
If I go fast.
Even better.
All right. I'm going to give you an easy one, a medium one, and a hard one. So you're at a 12-year-old's birthday party, okay? You're with your kids. And everybody's kind of standing around, and for the sake of being politically correct, we all kind of look the same, we all are socioeconomic the same, it's this and that. Conversation comes up about homework, right? Benign, homework.
Yeah.
So there's three ladies and myself, and there's a guy kind of standing over there, and homework's going around, well, homework's good for the kids, we have to help them at night, but it sure helps with grades, this and that, my husband and I, we do this and that. We really appreciate the teachers and all their efforts, and, you know, homework is a really a good thing. And everybody nods knowingly. And then the guy standing over there says, I think homework is irresponsible and unprofessional, and the teachers are taking the easy way out. Oh. And you can see, you know, sort of three mothers and me looking over at this guy. And this is where I kind of came up with the next process. What do we do now? Okay, this is the easy one. So there's four steps to this. First, don't react. Don't react at all. Nothing on your face, because you know you kind of want to jump in. Nope, don't react. Number two, don't respond to what the person said. Take a moment to ask them a little bit about themselves. So then I would say to this person, really, that's an interesting perspective. Tell me a little bit more. Of which he would say, well, I'm a father of three, 12, 10, and 8. Last year, my wife passed of cancer. I'm working two jobs to try to provide for my children. I don't have the financial resources, and quite frankly, I don't have the mental time and resources to teach my kids math. My kids are falling behind because homework is a differentiator between those people who have resources and those that don't. It's going to affect their college, all because my wife died of cancer. Oh.
Context matters.
And then the third step to that is venture a little more gently and get a little bit more. Well, when did this happen? You want to engage this person. The fourth step in a relatively easy one like this is, do you want to continue on the conversation? Do you want to share your opinion, or do you want this conversation to end? In a case like this, I might be intrigued enough to ask some questions and get into it and want to engage. But I can assure you that every time you sit down with your kids to do homework, you're never going to forget that conversation. Homework will never be viewed in the same context again.
So because you took the time to listen to that, to explore, and to try and get an understanding of why this person would say that, does it enrich you?
That's exactly the point, because I would be motor mouth in the old me and say, well, that's ridiculous. So, you know, homework's powerful, and off to the punch bowl.
Even though you don't know why it would be powerful.
That's exactly, but because I went to school, I used to do homework, my kids go to school, they do homework. I understand what homework is, and I had an idea about homework that was ingrained in the crucible of my experience. But there's a lot of other things about homework, and now I'm thinking of this poor guy at home with no time, no resources, trying to put his kids through hockey and ballet and running around, wondering why the kids can't learn for the 8 hours that they're in school. Why do they need to be foisted on a parent who may not be equipped to teach science or math?
Right, and then you start to do some research that questions that in its entirety.
It's an entirety, right? Yeah. So, example number one. Example number two. Now we find another guy, and you see this guy standing by himself, and you walk over, and you think, okay, there's a guy, there's a reason why he's standing by himself, I can't help myself. And you get talking, and he said, you know, we never landed on the moon. And you think, oh, okay. Step one, don't react. Right? Benign. Okay? Step two, don't ask about the question. Ask about the person. Oh, that's an interesting perspective. Why would you say that? Well, you know, my dad's brother used to work for NASA for many years. He used to bring us pictures and all that, but he was sworn to secrecy. He used to tell us all these stories. And now that he's passed, I got all the pictures and the examples, and I know a lot more about this now, and it's not true. We never landed on the moon. Okay, step three. Now we know who we're talking to. Step three is, tell me a bit more. Tell me, is this just garden variety crazy, or what is this? Now, all of a sudden, everything I've ever believed has been called into question. Truth is, I've never been to NASA. I don't know any astronauts. I really don't know if we landed on the moon, but I've come to believe it's true. Am I so confident in my government that they would never lie to me? You know, that's a stretch. Now I'm intrigued, as my friend Craig would say, tell me more. And then step four, do I want to carry on with this conversation and offer my opinion, or do I want to just walk away, right? So again, I have to know who I'm talking to, and then I want to learn more about their situation because I need to know my audience. And then it challenges everything I do. I know for sure that we landed on the moon, and the fact is, no, I don't.
Well, and do you even know the process that you would go through to be able to try and prove it one way or the other? As you're saying this, I'm going, I don't know where I could ever find the information that would categorically confirm that was true. And I've heard the conspiracy theories, but I cannot tell you whether so anything's true as far as going to the moon. So why is it that since the 1960s and early 1970s, no other country has launched a mission that went to the moon and back? I mean, now you've got me thinking.
Right. And so, you know, you can substitute gone to the moon to a million other categories that happen in our life, but all of a sudden, I am not 100% confident, so I got to listen now. Right. I used to want to argue with these people, and now I'm like, oh my God, I can't argue with you because I don't even, you might be telling me, I may be hanging on to a flawed argument.
This is our second break. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, Vince, but does this, like, you just used the word confidence, and does that not then deprive you a little bit of that certainty that you used to feel was so important to be able to say, no, that's the way I believe?
That's exactly why I was so wrong. And I'm confident now because I've done my homework. Can I give you the third example?
Of course.
Okay, this is a hard one. Okay?
Yeah.
This is it. And
the moon one's a pretty good one, too.
Well, this is a little more difficult. So, of course, in the news these days is, call it the residential school thing. So now you got the third guy in the party. And you walk over to him and you got your bowl of punch and you're pretty warmed up at this point. And he turns to you and says, residential schools were a good thing. They did a lot more good than harm. And I think the media is misconstruing the information. Okay.
How do you not react when you
feel your blood pressure coming, right? The first two were easy, right? Homework. How upset do I want to get? I can feel my blood pressure rising. And I've got my process now to help me, right? I got my process. My first reaction is no reaction. Nothing on my face. Don't show one way or the other.
Oh, that would be a hard one.
Because this is bugging me.
Yeah.
Number two, quietly and carefully, I would say, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself? Not about the argument, about yourself. And he would say, my great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my father were all principals at residential schools. In fact, my father was the last principal of the one locally here that closed down in the 60s. I lived my whole life in this world. I know more about it than anybody, and I can tell you that what you're reading isn't true. Deep breath, right? Now I'm talking to an expert. Now, he still may be wrong, still may be crazy, but I'm outgunned here. So my third point is, can you tell me a little bit more about this? So he's going to go on and tell me a little bit more about how he grew up playing with the kids and he learned and, you know, he knew about these and these kids died of natural causes and all this stuff that goes completely against everything that goes in your brain. Then I'm faced with step four. Do I walk away? And this was one of the hardest things that I learned, and you can apply it to so many different things in your life. I would say at this point, I would like to continue this conversation, but I am not equipped. I don't have enough information for my opinion to be valid. I'd like, if you wouldn't mind, to take your name and phone number. I'm going to go do some homework. And then if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to carry on this conversation in a couple of weeks. I haven't earned the right to an opinion. I don't know anybody that's ever been in a residential school. I know nothing about it except what I've heard on TV. It is ego-destroying to do that. It feels like when you face the bully and you have to give up your lunch money. But if you're going to face the bully after school down by the monkey bars, in the 70s reference, you better be mentally ready and physically ready. And when you face somebody where you're badly outmatched, you have to walk away. You have to go do your homework, swallow everything you've known, and come back with an opinion that's valid. There's a section on...
Or maybe you come back with insights that
insights,
are valid,
because then,
even then you can't inform an opinion.
At least then, I'm not just dealing with what I read in the media. You know, somebody denies the Holocaust, or they talk about abortion, or they talk about capital punishment. If you haven't done your homework, you really don't have the right to an opinion, in my view. So contextually, everything about me wants to argue with this person. But you can't sometimes. You have to go back and get
prepared. Especially if the media was your source. You know, I'm just reminded of a fantastic moment with Denzel Washington where a reporter asked him something and he goes, well, where'd you hear that? And the reporter said, well, I read it in the paper. And he goes, well, there's your problem. You're being educated by the media. Yeah. And the journalist or reporter said, well, what are my choices? Not read the news? He goes, well, no, if you didn't do that, you'd be uninformed. And he said, so we're in this challenging situation that if I read only the news, I'm misinformed. And if I don't read the news, I'm uninformed. This is where personal responsibility comes into play. And I think that the whole, you know, it's like second step of this context and the way that you've outlined the way in which somebody should respond is you have to take responsibility yourself to go and do the work of understanding what it is that you're going to talk about.
And it's very hard. And it's very hard if you're a person like me, and I use myself, please, in all these examples.
Yes,
I've
you
got
do.
All these ideas.
You laid yourself bare.
Yeah, I mean, this was hard. I found to be interesting, you have to be honest, and it was hard to be honest, and I got better at the end, to say, okay, I really want to give you my opinion. So to stop and not, your kid comes home and says, I'm going to a party tonight, I'll be home by midnight. And you say, well, curfew's at 11. And your kid turns and gets mad. Well, what's the difference between 11 and midnight? It's what your curfew used to be. And you think to yourself, well, I'll tell you. And all of a sudden, I had to think as a parent and say, okay, let me reanalyze all this stuff. What is it at about 11 o'clock? Should I negotiate? Is it dad knows best, or is it, am I working off principles that are predating my experience? I was a kid. I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to hear the word no. Maybe there's a compromise. It made me a better parent to stop the finger pointing and say, okay, I'm going to think about this. I need 15 minutes, and then we're going to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. The kid still may not win, but instead of reacting. So when I'm at work dealing with colleagues, when I'm dealing with all kinds of conflict, I'm much more interested today in hearing why another person would feel like they feel. Because as I learned in Africa, their opinions are born of the crucible of their experience.
Right.
And I didn't have that experience. So suddenly, I think I'm right just because I grew up in Vancouver, you know, part of my life in the Catholic Church, that view, and then over here and over there. So all of my experience was shaped here. But that doesn't make them wrong, but it doesn't make them right.
Third and final break. We'll be right back. You're making me think about Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, when he talks about the most powerful moment that you have in your life is that time between stimulus and response. Mm-hmm. How you choose to respond, and you make this point in your book, is what gives that moment meaning.
And I thank you for that, because I hadn't had the words for that. That's better and more articulate than I had. I ground it out because I started to realize, and that's when I said it can be laughable and embarrassing. When I say homework is good, right? And then the guy explains this and I think homework is bad. What a dumbass. Like, what are you thinking? Now, homework can take on a lot of different faces. And I think
it could be bad, it could be good.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful conversation to have with your teacher and maybe say, hey, this is what's happened in my life. Could you maybe try to send a little less home? I don't want my kids to get behind. I'm not very good at teaching, you are. So instead of just not having the conversation with the teacher, maybe you could explain the context of your situation. They could help you by doing a little more work at school, and we could all win. But we used to be afraid of having those conversations because it made us sound weak. But we're not weak.
I know. And you pointed out the fact that the moment you started saying, oh, okay, now I'm not so certain about my stance or my understanding on this, it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable. Now I'm feeling not so confident.
Yeah.
But now that you have learned to embrace mm-hmm. and live out this process of saying, well, let me think about this or let me do a little research, do you find that it is not actually far more rewarding from a confidence perspective to be able to say, I don't know at the moment, but I'm going to find out. And that when you do speak, you know that you've done the work to try and start to figure that out. Do you not actually feel that the outcome is that you're more confident, not less?
Well, of course, the humbling answer is absolutely yes. And I don't want to sit here in front of your audience and say I've got it all figured out. That's not the point.
No, that's not the point.
The point being is that these kind of four steps of discovery have made a huge difference. People have said to me, not my words, people have said to me, if you read this book, take it seriously and be introspective, go on your journey, it fundamentally changes your life, changes your day-to-day life, because you've changed your mind on things. Somebody spills a coffee on you, you used to get angry, or gets mad at you because they're frustrated about something. People don't usually get mad at you for no reason. Instead of getting mad back, you'd say, boy, I wonder what's going on here. Let me take a moment to see if I can find out. Now, at the end, if they're just being, you know, nasty, fine, we'll deal with it. But I find I don't get angry anymore. I hardly ever get angry. I find it almost a useless emotion because people don't get heated up at me for no reason. I must have done something. And if I did, I'm actually quite interested to learn. And if I'm dead ass wrong, I want to hear why. Because I want to let go of the arguments that are wrong. Flawed arguments, misunderstandings are the number one problem that we have in business, personal relationships, all that. And me always wanting to talk instead of listen, even though that's been said many times, many ways, has been the basis of that.
You know, Vince, when I first got the book, I thought, yeah, I've been on this journey all my adult life because there were all kinds of challenges that pushed me in that way.
Yes.
And I got thinking, you know, I read Viktor Frankl and, you know, Adolf Adler and all, and Dr. Carl Rogers. And, like, these were all academics who spoke from a perspective that didn't quite speak to me the same way that your book did. And I wish that when I was younger, your book existed because you touch on all those points. And in the writing of the book, do you kind of hope that what you're doing is you're passing on somebody saying to somebody, this is a layman's guide to the good life?
Well, I really appreciate those kind words. Partly, too, it was a legacy for my kids. Just in the few minutes that we have left, you know, we don't know our parents as adults. And I never really thought about it. You're about 25 years old before you finally meet your parents. And they're 45 or 50. We don't know what they were like in their 20s. We don't know what they thought about because we've just had a different relationship with them. And I thought, you know, I'm pretty close with my kids, but I thought, I wonder if I could leave, you know, wouldn't be so presumptuous to say a roadmap, they'll do what they do, but breadcrumbs. What if I could leave some breadcrumbs about how I felt, deeply felt, about a lot of things? You can't always get into these discussions around the dinner table in the short time that we have. What if I have grandchildren and they say, what was the old guy about? And you could say, well, you know, maybe there's no bronze statue at the swimming pool, but you could read his book and maybe, just maybe, there's, because these ideas and problems aren't new. The idea of listening to other people, understanding their points of view, agreeing to disagree. Consensus is not the goal here. This is not a guidebook on do what I say. This is do more listening, do more thinking, do your own research, be responsible, be accountable, and enjoy conversations that are different from your own and thoughts that are different from your own, right? Homework is good.
Well, I appreciated the book, and I appreciate you taking the time
to come in. Oh, this is really fun. I love this stuff. I wish we could go on and on forever, but I appreciate the time, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.